Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We want to delve a little deeper into these two Supreme Court rulings that came down yesterday. The first ends a nearly decades-long legal suit filed against Walmart. The court agreed unanimously that the plaintiffs sued improperly and the suit couldn't move forward as a class action that include 1.5 million female workers. The court was divided, though, on the second piece of that, 5-4 on ideological lines over whether or not there's enough evidence to prove there were common practices that resulted in discrimination against those women. We're joined now by Jeff Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University and author of The Supreme Court, The Personalities and Rivalries That Defined America. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
All right. So let's take these two different rulings that are part of this same case against Walmart and get some more details about them. First, you've got the class action portion of it, which is a lot of people are talking about. Would you agree that this really raises the bar for what constitutes class action status?
It absolutely raises the bar. In some sense, the part that the court was unanimous about is technical and far less significant. The unanimous part is that the women couldn't bring a claim for back pay as a remedy to discrimination under the legal theory that their lawyers had used. But the most important thing is that the court divided on the question of whether, when you have a large company, you could bring a class action on the grounds that there was a policy of discrimination based on failure to supervise local officers and that you could use statistical evidence of bias to prove the claim. By rejecting that notion, the court has made it much harder to sue large companies with decentralized offices. There is a large class action against the Philip Morris Tobacco Company, which is before the court, which may be affected by this. And generally, the dissenters argued strenuously that this raised the bar, changed the legal standards, and now you're going to have to bring lots of individualized suits rather than class actions in the future.
But is there any guidance? You know, we've been listening to the plaintiff's attorney saying that this simply means that Walmart will now face, as he calls it, tens of thousands of individual cases. Do you think that there's guidance in this 5-4 decision on how to pursue these individual cases against Walmart?
Well, of course, it's not practical to bring tens of thousands of cases, but there is guidance in this sense. The court says very clearly you need clear evidence of discrimination against every individual plaintiff. So it's not enough to say that statistics show that women in general in a particular area are discriminated against. You have to show that a particular woman suffered from sex discrimination. And that is a change in the standard, which is just going to make it much harder to bring these cases in the future.
So these two decisions that came from the court, the unanimous one on the class action case and, as you say, the back pay, and then the divided one, 5-4, on actually whether there's enough evidence to prove a nationwide policy of discrimination. Is this a clear victory for Walmart?
It is a clear victory for Walmart. That they couldn't have asked for more, and lots of class action lawyers were surprised because they think that the standards really were changed.
Well, let me ask you about whether or not the other ruling that came down was a clear victory for someone. The Supreme Court also unanimously rejected a suit that dealt with the regulation of greenhouse gas emissions. The justices said courts can't regulate greenhouse gas emissions. Only the federal government and the EPA can do so. Who won that?
The federal government won that one.
No, it's hard, isn't it?
I don't know about consumers. You know, it was the Obama administration criticized by some for siding with the power companies and against regulation. But this is a really interesting case. Basically, a bunch of states have been frustrated by the fact that the EPA has been dragging its feet about regulating greenhouse gases and emissions that come from electric power plants. So they sued, saying that this was a public nuisance and courts should impose limits on the failure to regulate. And the court unanimously rejected that claim. It said that because Congress authorizes the EPA to regulate, then consumers have to wait until the EPA makes its decision. That's now expected in May, but they can't bring this separate public nuisance suit. And this comes on the heel of a decision 3 years ago, which was divided 5-4, where the court said that consumers could sue the EPA to force it to regulate greenhouse gases in the first place. In other words,
right,
that the statute actually did authorize the regulation of greenhouse gas. The four conservatives dissented from that point And in this decision, there's a really interesting separate opinion by Justice Alito and Justice Thomas, where they said that they still haven't gotten over that defeat, and they don't even concede the authority of the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases in the first place.
That's Jeff Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University, author of The Supreme Court, Personalities and Rivalries That Defined America. Also with us, Robert Hernan, author of This Borrowed Earth, and also former assistant attorney general in the Environmental Protection Bureau in the state of New York. So, Robert, is this good news or bad news for the environment, the Supreme Court decision?
I think it's good news. I think it's a complicated case because in 2004, when this lawsuit was brought by New York and other parties, when I was in that office, the Bush administration had taken a position that carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions are not regulated under the Clean Air Act, and so EPA has no authority to regulate those. And so the states were left with a dilemma. We've got a harm. What remedy can we find? They said, okay, we'll file a lawsuit in federal court under the old federal common law and say some judge will fashion a remedy for us. At the same time, we're going to file a lawsuit against the Bush administration and saying you're wrong in the way you're interpreting the Clean Air Act. 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court said states are right. The Bush administration is wrong in interpreting the Clean Air Act. The carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions are regulated as pollutants under the Clean Air Act, and EPA is obliged to do that. And so both those lawsuits are going on through the same time. This recent court, all it did was reaffirm its 2007 decision, say, yes, EPA has the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions and must do so and is doing so. And so it reinforces the 2007 decision. The trap for the regulated community is that if Congress withdraws
defunds.
It withdraws the authority of EPA to regulate carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions as it's attempting to do, and then it reopens the door for these common law claims in federal court by the states. And the states, I think, would merely refile and say, okay, you've taken away the authority, which was the basis for the Supreme Court saying we can't file under common law claim. And now we're going to go file with common law claim. That's a nightmare for the regulated industry because now you have like a million lawsuits in the Walmart case. You have thousands of lawsuits across the country, each judge trying to decide how to cap these regulations, these emissions.
We're going to continue this conversation with Robert Hernan. He's the author of This Borrowed Earth and former assistant attorney general in the Environmental Protection Bureau of the state of New York. That's obviously important because state of New York was one of the states that filed in the Supreme Court decision that came down yesterday relating to the regulation of greenhouse gases. So stay with us, Robert.
Sure.
Continuing now our conversation with Robert Hernan, author of This Borrowed Earth. He's a former assistant attorney general in the Environmental Protection Bureau in the state of New York, and in a sense, one of the voices tangentially, but really a part of the legal action being brought to force the federal government to enforce regulations under the Clean Air Act involving greenhouse gases. Now, you alluded a moment ago that if the EPA is actually changed. If statutorily Congress says the EPA doesn't have any authority over greenhouse gases, that in a sense nullifies this and we go back to court under common law. But isn't it also the case if the EPA just says we don't have the funding to enforce this, that it's nullified and that the courts have ruled yesterday that you can't come back to us on this? If the EPA just isn't going to do anything, they're kind of the final authority here.
Well, I should clarify. I never actually worked on this case. I was in the office during case development. But I think what the court said was if EPA goes through the whole process of regulating the greenhouse gases and you don't like the result at the end of that because for some reason, not for financial reasons, but for other reasons, finds that it's not going to regulate it, then you have a remedy under the Clean Air Act to sue EPA for violating the law, going beyond what its obligations were or not fulfilling its obligations.
So it's the understanding of states, attorneys general and others, and environmentalists for that matter, that the supreme law in this case is the Clean Air Act, not the enabling legislation that created the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yes, yes.
And so the original intent of the Clean Air Act still rules here.
As declared by the Supreme Court in 2007, and I think it's going to be very hard to go back on that one.
And in fact, Congress has not amended the Clean Air Act in any substantial way to roll it back. It's actually made it more aggressive.
Well, it has in the past, but there has been bills recently passed by the House which attempts to, in fact, withdraw the authority of the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases. If that were to happen, that would in effect overturn this U.S. Supreme Court decision, which Congress has the right to do and has in the past in other instances.
But would it constitute actually amending the Clean Air Act?
Yes.
In fact, so that yes. actually would do that.
Yeah, they can. But as I said, that then opens the door for the states to refile under the federal common law, as they did here, and that opens the door to a whole slew of individual cases across the country, which is a nightmare for industry.
But you know the politics here. Amending the Clean Air Act is a high bar for critics.
It is very hard. It's very hard to do.
It's been tried,
yes.
and it's failed numerous times. So this case is possibly settled here, and it's up to the EPA to do something.
I think so. I'm very optimistic about it. Now, I could be delusional, but time will tell which one's true.
Robert could be delusional. We've never noticed it, though, as many times he's been on this show.
Time will tell.
Robert Hernan, author of This Borrowed Earth, former Assistant Attorney General in the Environmental Protection Bureau of the State of New York. Thanks, as always, Robert.
My pleasure, as always. Thanks, both.